too much gardening to do at that particular time of the year. So let's not wait until May to do it. But in any case, I agree with your remarks.
Ms. Lonfeldt, if I might ask a couple of questions here. I'll have to go back to your horse race. Seems rather disturbing that the number of competitive projects are being developed all over the world, and we're in that position, or we'd like to be in that position, from your presentation of competing with those other projects. You bring up the 4.9% Japanese loan to Qatar, which I think you should point out is probably in Japanese yen, and the interbank rates over there are almost zero right now. So.
Actually, I think it's in dollars, but...
It is. Well, whatever. I'd be curious to know that.
Sure. We'll find
but, you know, given the fact that they've already reached the financing arrangements for this project, the fact that it's on a tidewater area, even though it's within Scud range, it seems like they have a significant leg up on us, and that one project alone be enough to shut us out of this whole... marketplace. I mean, do you care to comment on that?
Sure, I do. First of all, your observation is quite correct. The Qatarian, this little teeny country, happens to sit on 300 trillion plus cubic feet of natural gas. Remember, Prudhoe Bay, which is the largest deposit in North America, is 26 trillion cubic feet. They are sitting on 300 trillion plus. Now, there are a number of reasons why that project, you are correct, that project could expand and take the whole market, not just our share, but the whole market. But there are three reasons why that probably will not happen. The first reason is that it is in that very bad neighborhood. And the Japanese have been burned twice before with oil crises and came awfully close to being burned a third time when we had the little problem over there in Kuwait. And they don't want to be placed in that position again. Many of the Japanese trading companies have told us they will not invest more than a couple of $100 million in the Middle East ever again in any single project. So that's one reason. The second reason is that the expansion potential for those projects are not as good as the Alaskan expansion potential. Qatar is twice the distance to Japan than is Alaska. For every one ship we need, they need two ships for construction purposes, and for every one ship we operate and have to pay for, they have to operate two ships. So that's the second reason. The third reason is that there is a great reluctance amongst the Japanese buyers in particular in putting all of their eggs into any one basket. The Qatar project was actually a project that BP tried to put together for a number of years. And for one reason or another, it didn't think the economics were very attractive, and it pulled out. Mobil stepped in. Now, Mobil's been able to make the project work. It's worked with one of the buyers of LNG in Japan, Chubu Electric. It took Chubu Electric 4 or 5 years to find partners to buy the gas. Chubu said, we need to have 6 million tons to make the project work. On day one, Chubu said, we'll take 4 of those. Anybody else want to take the other 2 in Japan? And everybody went, not me. I don't want it. And finally, Japan Inc. had to step forward and say, look, Chubu needs this 4 million tons. They've been relying on it. The people in the Chubu prefecture are not going to have energy if we don't get this project going. Guess what? Everybody else here in Japan, you're going to have to step up to the plate. And so they forced the other 2 million tons into the project. It took a long, long time. The buyers did not appreciate Japan Inc. making that move on them, and they don't want to do it again. They would prefer to buy gas from Alaska. Now, on top of everything else, there are a series of ways that you develop these projects. And in Qatar, they have one project called Qatar 1, which is the one I've just discussed. The next project up is a separate project called Ras Laffan. And it's not an expansion project. It's a whole separate standalone project. So its economics are grassroots as opposed to expansion. So there are lots of reasons why that shouldn't happen. But that's not to say that it couldn't happen. And we need to get in there now so that the Japanese aren't looking for a girlfriend over there because they have a wife over here. That simple.
Thank you. Just in a different line of attack, you mentioned before your firm would spend tens of millions of dollars. Do you care to tell us how much the total investment of CXS is on this project?
I am the fourth president of Yukon Pacific Corporation. And for the love of me, I am not sure why we never make this number public. But the first one said, we'll never do it. And the second one said, we'll never do it. And the third one said, we never do it. And when I got it and opened up my desk, the first thing I saw in it was, don't ever tell anybody how much we spent until you really have to. I will tell you that it's well over $50 million.
Well, the reason I ask that,
Well,
isn't it a matter of public record in your annual reports from
CXA? No, Yukon Pacific does not have an annual report.
I see. Wholly owned subsidiary, then.
Well, no, I have to step back. We are
not
wholly owned. And this is something I left out of my presentation. 10% of this project is owned by a charitable foundation. 10% of the profits of this project will go to that charitable foundation. It is, in effect, a permanent fund for the charities of Alaska. It's a special kind of foundation. It can only spend money in Alaska on Alaskan charities. And so as federal dollars in this field reduce, et cetera, thank God we're going to have a permanent fund for charities.
And to follow up, there's been some conversations, or I've been told that right now one of the desires of CSX is to monetize Yukon Pacific's assets and investment in the project and actually sell it to the producers. Would you care to comment on that?
Sure. We've made it very, very clear to the producers and to the Japanese and to other entities that have come and tried to partner with us that CSX intends to have 15 to 25% of this project. Its balance sheet is not capable of taking 100% of this project, and we don't happen to believe that it makes sense for CSX to have a larger share than the North Slope producers, who clearly should control this project. But we are not seeking to sell out this project. Railroads are a very cyclical business, and shipping is a very cyclical business. What this project does is create a situation where money comes out in a very even flow. And CSX views this as not only a transportation system for which, you know, there's a link into its setup, not only because Sealand is the world's largest private shipper and could certainly become involved in shipping LNG, but it also looks at this as a way of filling in those troughs when the automobile industry goes down, when the coal industry goes down, because that's what CSX makes the bulk of its money on, shipping cars and coal. And that's very cyclical. They like the idea of having something to fill that trough.
Well, assuming the pipeline would go forward, and it would only go forward if it was a profitable enterprise,
really?
Would you like to see, or would you advise, or have you discussed with the state, or the concept now, strictly conceptual, whether the state of Alaska or the Permanent Fund would invest in your project?
Well, I happen to believe that it would behoove the state. Let me put it this way. As a recipient of permanent fund dividends, yes, I think that's a very good idea. As a entity that has to deal under the Freedom of Information Act, if I have a state partner, it gives me a little bit of a heartburn. So we would have to figure out how you would handle running a corporation that's trying to negotiate with the Japanese, Koreans, and Taiwanese at the same time as we've got to deal with a Freedom of Information Act that requires complete openness. I like the idea of state investment for two reasons. One, it's very, very profitable project, and it's going to be good for the people of the state of Alaska. But there's a second reason. When you have state investment in a project, as opposed to just state regulatory control over a project, it tends to tenderize how the state views that project. The state will think two and three times before increasing the taxes on a project that it's making money from. It's that simple. So in that regard, I think conceptually it does make sense. Is it required? No. Can the permanent fund today make the kinds of investment that would make sense? No. So you'd have to change that statute. I think you're limited to a couple of million dollars per in-state investment, et cetera, or any one given project. But conceptually, I think it's a good idea. And I think it's a way that we can enter into that tax treaty that we talk about to prevent this project from becoming the next taxing entity that we can go to when we continue to have a budget gap, which, of course, people are going to do away with anyway. So conceptually, I think it's a good idea.
Any further questions? Representative Long.
Yeah, I got one. Jeff, you got on this handout
yes.
That item 5, these partner control estates royalty 12.5%, which they could commit to the project.
Yes.
And you're asking the state legislature now to commit to this
project? No,
Can you please explain this 12.5%?
Sure. The state of Alaska has a 12.5% of the gas, or owns a 12.5% of the gas up on the North Slope. I think there are a few leases that have 20%, but it's essentially a 12.5% royalty, just as it is with the oil. Now, the state has the opportunity to take that gas in kind or to have, you know, the gas project sell it. If this project needs a jump start, it very well may be that some of that royalty gas should be used to jumpstart that project. If there is a problem between the three companies in taking their natural gas out of Prudhoe Bay on a timely basis because of whatever reasons there are, maybe the state can commit its 12.5% early, as opposed to, you know, going over the whole period of time. That 12.5% should not be given away for free. There's no question about that. But it is one of the economic tools that the state has to adjust and manipulate the economics of this project as it starts. I am not, again, suggesting that it be given free to the project, but it very well may be that the project pays for that gas 5 years down the road instead of on day one. It's just a tool, and it's time for the state to start using that tool, as we did, I think, back in the 60s when then-Governor Hickel, I believe, and maybe it was Governor Egan, said, we'll make our royalty gas available, you'll have to pay for it, to anybody that wants to use it in-state. And so we ended up with a couple of in-state refineries. I mean, it's a very effective tool that the state can be using to help stimulate this project and move it forward.
On a follow-up, is that 12.5% large enough to jumpstart the project?
Well, the project requires 16.5 to 20 trillion cubic feet of natural gas be committed to the project before you can start. You can then start the project with 12.5% as long as you know that there is the rest of the gas coming online at time certain. But you've got to know that ahead of time. And the reason why you have to know that ahead of time is because you finance a $14 billion or $13 billion project using the gas as your asset. It's like a mortgage for the house. You don't make your payments, then, you know, the bank comes and takes your house. This project doesn't make its payments, then the banks come and take the gas, you know. And none of the companies, I would think, would want to finance this off their own balance sheets. They want to use the gas as the asset for financing. So, again, the state has the opportunity to help in that regard.
Any further questions?
Let me just say one other thing, and again, I don't want to be pandering to the people of Fairbanks and Glen Allen and Valdez and Token every place else, but the state could also use that royalty gas and subsidize, like in a power equalization situation, as we do in some instances with electrical power, fuel, you know, gas into these communities. It's a lot easier to get gas to Fairbanks. It's a lot more difficult to get gas over to Tok. It's a lot easier to get gas into Stevens Village. It's a lot more difficult to get gas into Fort Yukon. And it may be that the state wants to use that royalty gas as sort of a way to maybe adjust some of the stuff. There are a lot of opportunities using royalty gas to do a lot of creative things for the state.
Well, thank you, Mr. Longfellows. We really appreciated your coming here and the presentation today. I'm sure everybody in the committee appreciates that. Yeah.
Quick comment? Very quick.
Representative Ogden.
I just wanted to just note for the record that I'll also be unable to attend. Express my regrets for not being able to attend a presentation by the producers tomorrow, and hope they don't take offense to it. I will be watching it very closely and get a copy of the tape and listen. So.
Very good. Thank you, sir. Well, thank you again, Mr.
I'd like to thank all of you for taking this time. I know it's been an awful long time, and we didn't even take a potty break. Very admirable. Thank you very, very much.
Very good. Well, this committee stands adjourned at 11:57. Thank you very much.